This is Stateside. I'm Christina Shockley. The Flint water crisis is now an important piece of the city's story and history. It will affect the city and its residents for decades to come. Michigan Radio and countless other local and national news outlets have reported various aspects of the crisis, from how it unfolded to how the crisis will continue to affect the city's children as they grow into adults. The Center for Michigan's Bridge magazine has now published a book that aims to bring the story, at least what we know now, together in one place. The book is called Poison on Tap: How Government Failed Flint and the Heroes Who Fought Back. John Bebo is president and CEO of the Center for Michigan. John, there's been a lot of reporting on this crisis, although many would argue that that reporting didn't happen soon enough. What does this book give us that we don't already have?
What we seek to do with this book, Christina, is to wrap the story into one place. It's such a busy media climate for concerned citizens, and there has been so much news that has come out over the past year on the Flint water crisis. We hope this is a service for concerned Michigan residents or people concerned anywhere about local democracy and water issues and public safety, where you can get the essentials in one place. We make no claim to own this story. In fact, if anybody owns it, it might be Michigan Radio and some of your reporting very early on. But what we're trying to do here is wrap this story into one place.
The book is largely a timeline with dates and descriptions of when exactly things happened. You also have analysis from your reporters and writers, and you have analysis from the Truth Squad. As you were putting all of this together, who was your audience? Who is this book for?
You know, I hope this doesn't sound too odd, but our first audience was ourselves. Bridge, like many media outlets, was covering the Flint water crisis somewhat over the past year. Our coverage dates back to January of 2015. But what really drove us to go much deeper and develop a rat-a-tat timeline of what happened in Flint, it started with an issue of Tim Skubick's Off the Record show in January. Two really respected guests were on that night, Bill Ballinger, the former publisher of Inside Michigan Politics, and Gretchen Whitmer, the former Senate minority leader in the Michigan Senate. What they both had to say struck me personally as so incredible and outrageous that our team immediately started to dig deeper. Bill Ballinger said, "I run Flint water over my rice every night, and there's no problem in Flint." And that just struck me as incredible. And Gretchen Whitmer followed that up by saying, "The governor of Michigan poisoned the children of Flint." That struck me as equally incredible. And instead of dropping into Flint and covering a story at the street level and then pulling back out, which had been our initial approach, we decided to go as deep as we could and get every document we could. And that's part of what we're trying to do with this book, is to protect against revisionist history on all sides and to provide readers with incremental detail by incremental detail of what happened so they can make some of their own decisions about who's to blame and what happened. But the story was spinning so out of control pretty early on. And then there was this incredible release of documents. You should never say never, but I'll be surprised if we ever see this level of government decision-making on such blunt display as eventually came out through the Flint water crisis. I think that began with Mark Edwards, the Virginia Tech professor who's one of the real heroes of this story, making information requests to state agencies and then releasing those records on a blog. The records were released and a few reporters picked up on them, but there was an incredible amount of detail. And at the center and at Bridge, we're public policy geeks. So when you see all those details in government emails that you rarely get to see, just an incredible, incredible amount of detail, and then the governor's emails on top of that, what we're trying to represent in this book is how decisions get made, how mistakes get made, how miscommunication happens, some of the competing forces in play.
We're talking with John Bebo. He's the president and CEO of the Center for Michigan. They have a new book out this week about the Flint water crisis. It's called Poison on Tap: How Government Failed Flint and the Heroes Who Fought Back. If you had to describe the narrative of this book to someone from Oregon, from a different state, what would your elevator pitch be? What's the narrative of this book?
Wherever you are on the political spectrum in this very divided country, if you are a Tea Partier or if you are a tax and spend liberal, the Flint water crisis should outrage you to the maximum degree.
Why?
Because there were so many mistakes at so many levels. a perfect storm of utter failures that caused this crisis. It's a parable for troubled cities across our country. That's another reason we wanted to amplify to this to a book, because this is not just about Flint. The circumstances, what happened in Flint, can happen in so many other places so easily that we don't want this story to go away. We want this to be studied and to be understood and to be fixed beyond the crisis on the ground in Flint.
In a way, you only captured here the beginning of this story, because this story is still unfolding. There are going to be a lot of effects that we don't even know yet. What is still missing from what we do know? You have a pretty good timeline here. Where are the gaps in this timeline?
I think the discovery processes of the criminal investigations and of the civil lawsuits and the audits that various government agencies are doing on themselves and on each other could provide more detail. And obviously, the story's only half told. Other shoes haven't dropped. There are criminal cases and lawsuits that are continuing. And as we describe in the book, this book represents the headwaters of this tale. There's years more to come out of this as Flint attempts to recover. Here's what's not missing. There is an incredible amount of detail, not just in this book, but was available in the public sphere in this case. This was a major public health crisis, and the amount of dialogue between government agencies and the windows into the decisions they made, the missteps they made, it's really instructive and it's really rare. We rarely get to see this level of detail about, in this case, how very broken some of our government systems are.
The governor at the Mackinac Policy Conference called the media a bunch of Eeyores for dwelling on the past and not looking to the optimistic future. This book is about the past. What do you make of the governor's remarks?
I can understand his frustration, and it is his nature to be forward-looking and always positive. But this crisis cannot be ignored, and this tale needs to continually be told. There's so much unrest in this country. There's so much dismay across political systems. But there is inspiration coming out of Flint. Government failed. The people did not. The citizens demanded answers all the way to the White House. Dr. Mona got them answers as the state health department was saying, no problem. Mark Edwards, vigilant watchdog as he is, came in here and finally told the truth when state agencies were denying it for months. That's what our country's based on, self-representation and people taking matters into their own hands. And that's what happened here. Flint may be splintered, but it is not completely broken because that portion of democracy worked.
The role of reporters in many ways is to obviously tell a story, but also to illuminate, especially when it comes to this story, to further the discussion, to bring awareness, to potentially bring change, which is what the Flint residents were screaming for. What do you think about how the Michigan media have handled this crisis?
I'll quote the Flint Water Task Force, which was bipartisan experts in public policy and public health. They very much complimented the media for being the watchdogs that we in the media strive to be, and for one of the reasons that the entire crisis came to light. I think without Kurt Guyette's reporting at the American Civil Liberties Union and Michigan Radio's very early reporting, I think some of the documents, which are now well known, would not have been amplified. As the Flint Water Task Force said, without that work and the work of some of the other heroes in Flint, the citizens of Flint may still be drinking tainted water. And that's where I take issue with the governor. This can't go away. There are too many lessons that need to be learned here so that we don't have this happen again.
Where do we go from here? How do we make sure that this story is told completely and fully?
Well, part of our take on that was to make sure that the story known to date is told as completely as you can. This book is incremental detail after incremental detail. I think a lot of readers will scan it more than read every single word. We did that intentionally because we don't want revisionist history here. We saw it earlier this winter. The Environmental Protection Agency came out and said, oh, we tried. We tried to fix the problems in Flint. We're calling BS on that. No, they didn't. They sat on Miguel de Toro, their own experts, deep, deep concerns about Flint for months. They hold some responsibility here, and they have already tried revisionist history, and we don't want that revisionist history to happen. That's why this book is being put out there.
John Bebo is the president and CEO of the Center for Michigan. They have a new book out this week about the Flint water crisis. It's called Poison on Tap: How Government Failed Flint and the Heroes Who Fought Back. John, thanks for talking with me about this.
It is my great pleasure to be here.